Going online without ExpressVPN is like confessing your sins at church, but everyone can read your mind. You may not have anything to hide, but is it really everyone's business? This is why everyone needs a VPN, because all your traffic flows through their servers. Internet service providers, including mobile network providers, know every single website you visit. ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure, encrypted servers, so your internet service provider can't see your browsing history. ExpressVPN will hide your IP address, making it extremely difficult for third parties to track your online activity. All you have to do is fire up the app and click one button to get protected. I use ExpressVPN personally to protect my online activity from hackers, spammers, and the deep state. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/matter. That's expressvpn.com/matter. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/matter. There's a new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions called Morning Kick. It combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. All you do is mix with water, stir, and enjoy. It tastes like strawberry lemonade, not like ground-up spinach. Morning Kick is part of my daily routine. It's replaced orange juice in my life as the first place I go when I wake up. And since I've been drinking it, I've had better digestion and more energy. For me, that's important now that I have a newborn who, let's just say, doesn't always sleep like a baby. My health is important to me, just like it's important to you. I want to be the best version of myself spiritually, mentally, and physically. If you feel sluggish, it's worth giving Morning Kick a try. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/HARRIS today. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Good morning. We are live now on the Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm your host, John Harris, and we have with us once again, Trevor Loudon. How you doing, Trevor?
I'm doing great, John. Always good to catch up.
Yeah, I love talking with you. It's been too long. It's been, I think, maybe 2 or 3 years since you were on the podcast.
Yeah, probably close. And it's I see the podcast is going great. So congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Well, we, I guess, spent a lot of time together when Enemies Within the Church was being promoted and you were part of that. And of course, the movie's out now. And so we haven't seen as much of each other, but you're still doing the same work you were doing before, which is tracking down powerful leaders on the left and their communist or Marxist connections. And you have a book coming out, and that's what we're going to talk about, called Stealth, Kamala Harris's Communist Roots. And if people want to order that, then go to Trevor Loudon, LOUDON.com. And you said that it would be out, I believe, on Saturday. If they want to get it through Amazon, they can get it there as well.
Well, it should be. It's going to go to Amazon any day. Sometimes they take a couple of days to approve it, but it's right on the verge of going on Amazon. But people are currently ordering it through my website. And if you go through my website, you make me a little bit richer and you get it signed. Oh. So otherwise you go to Jeff, you make Jeff Bezos a little bit richer and you don't get it signed. But either way, get it, because it will blow your mind. This is most comprehensive book on Kamala Harris's life and the people around her and the pure communist connections that's ever been done.
What are your research methods, if you don't mind me asking? Because to track this stuff down, it just seems a difficult thing with Kamala specifically. Not that I've tried to do a deep dive, but she just has somewhat of a mysterious past, it seems, and there's not a lot of policy attached to her, especially as the vice president. So, like, what do you look at to find out her?
Yeah, well, that's she's deliberately avoided making stands so she couldn't be pigeonholed. She's been preparing for this for her entire life. She's a bit like Obama. She was a chosen candidate. She's been nurtured for a long time. But what I do your basic online stuff. I do a lot of interviews with former communists. security personnel, FBI agents, etc. But the main way I get my stuff is, you know, communists being good atheists, but students of history, they love history as their God, and they want to be part of history. And so when they are getting ready to die, you know, every town's got a few communists. When they're getting ready to pass on, they gather all their works, their books, their membership cards, their lists, minutes of meetings, letters to members of Congress, photographs, and they put them in boxes and they donate them to a university library, because they think somebody in 100 years' time will come along and use this material to write a wonderful biography of their great revolutionary life. And this is their immortality. So my wife and I and others in our team go to these libraries, and we spend hundreds of hours sifting through papers, photographing documents, cross-referencing them on my KiwiKi website, etc., to build up the picture. That's how I could write a 700-page book on Obama. That's how I'm writing this book now on Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. A lot of it is archival research. The kind of thing that your average journalist either wouldn't know how to do or would be too lazy to do.
It's very hard work to do that. I know from my own history graduate degree.
Oh, you're a historian. You've done so much of this.
Well, I haven't got, like, I know how to do it, but you know, I've spent more time in online archives and that kind of thing to actually go. I have seen it. I know, you know, friends of mine who have done it, but to go to the library and just ask for boxes of material that have not been photocopied, that no one's probably looked at. Yeah. That's grueling work. You have to cipher. You even have to look at handwriting and figure out what they're saying. It's not all typed out.
I went through, there's this communist around Obama, and I went, she had boxes of close typed handwriting, like little spidery things, just boxes and boxes and boxes of letters. And talk about tedious. But some of it is a lot easier than that. You know, they'll have, you know, records of their trip to communist Grenada, or, you know, minutes of a meetings where a congressman attended and they did deals on how they could support him in exchange for policy. You know, a great example is there's a guy, you know, what's his name? He was Obama's secretary, Leon Panetta, who was head of the CIA and Secretary of Defense under Obama. You know, there was a communist in Northern California called Hugh DeLacy. And I'd go through Hugh DeLacy's files and all these letters to Panetta. And Panetta would send him military documents. At the same time, DeLacy was corresponding with two known Chinese agents and two known Soviet agents while he was getting stuff from Panetta, and working closely with Panetta, who became head of the CIA and Secretary of Defense. This is the kind of stuff you'll find if you look for it.
Some of us don't want to find that stuff.
Well, so maybe not. Maybe not. Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, let's.
But you know the truth. The truth. Yeah. You got to know the truth, and that's the thing. It is an act of courage to identify unpleasant truths. Yeah. And that takes, you know, that takes a certain amount of faith. You got to understand this is a good thing to do. This is what we're supposed to do, and just ignoring reality is not going to help anybody. But I understand. Yeah. I fully understand. You know, sometimes you do lie awake a bit at night. There's a burden with that knowledge sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you doing it. When I don't know of anyone else who is doing that kind of thing. I want to start off talking about Kamala this way. There's someone I very much respect who was served in the military, and they see Kamala Harris as the vice president. And this is an office to be respected. And that to call her radical, to attach a negative pejorative, like she's a Marxist, I would assume also, that these are disrespectful kinds of things. And my response was that, you know, The thing is, though, those words actually have meanings, and Kamala Harris doesn't seem to want to be pinned down, as you said, on policy. So how else are we going to know how she'll govern when she's in the presidency? We can look at what she's done as a vice president, but it doesn't seem like it's much. They've kept her in a back closet.
Yeah, yeah.
So, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, you know, you can respect the office, but that doesn't mean everybody who's ever held that is worthy of that respect. You know, Richard Nixon certainly disgraced the office of the presidency, did he not? There's been, people respect the papacy, but there's been some pretty corrupt popes, have there not, at certain times. You've got to tell the truth. You know, Kamala Harris is an usurper. That's why I call the book Stealth, because her whole career has been stealthily, underhandedly, covertly getting herself in positions of power that she could not do if she was honest about her true positions. She is a political criminal. I say that with no compunction whatsoever. And for your friend, I understand he's a military guy. He wants to respect his leadership. She might be his commander-in-chief, but he should respect his oath to the Constitution more, that he is supposed to guard the Republic from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And she is absolutely a domestic enemy of the Constitution. So that is the oath he should be putting before his regard of the office and being discerning and deciding that that woman is not fit for that office.
Well, let's start at the beginning, if you don't mind, Trevor. Kamala Harris, I don't know much about her roots, except she keeps saying she was born into a middle-class family. That's what she says.
A middle-class communist family. Yes. Yes.
And she had her mother was Indian, right?
Yeah.
Or ethnically Indian.
Shyamala Gopalan from Tamil Nadu in southern India. Yep.
And her father was, I guess, where was he from?
From Jamaica. He was an economist, a black guy of mixed race, but a black guy from Jamaica. With some white heritage, as you know, many Jamaicans are. So Shyamala Gopalan is a Marxist. She was a contributor to the book Black Marxism. She was one of the people who was credited with putting it together by Cedric Robinson, I think his name was. And so she's a Marxist. Her father, Don Harris, was a famous Marxist economist. Not a unknown. He wrote books on Marxism. He wrote articles on Marxism. He was recruited to Stanford University Economics Department as an affirmative action Marxist because they didn't have enough Marxists in the department at the time. So they specifically recruited him as a Marxist, to balance out the ticket, so to speak. So they're both open Marxists, both of them. Well, Don was more open. Shyamala was a bit more on the lowdown. But they were both members of the Afro-American Association. This was a very radical group in Berkeley in the early 60s. It spawned the Black Panther Party. The Black Panther Party came out of this group. They were openly third world communist. They supported Ho Chi Minh, Che Guevara, Fidel Castro, Mao Tse-tung. This was a communist group, and people need to understand the Black Panthers were not black nationalists. They were pro-North Korean, pro-Chinese, pro-Cuban Maoists. That was a Maoist organization. Interestingly, the head of that organization, Donald Warden, changed his name to Khalid al-Mansur and converted to Islam and worked as an agent for a Saudi prince for some years, and he was the man who got a young Barack Obama into Harvard because there was a program on at the time from the Saudis to get young radicals of color into senior positions in the U.S. government who would be pro-Palestine, who would support that side of things. So Kamala, both parents were Marxists. She used to go to a Marxist social club every Thursday night in grade school. You know, it was called the Rainbow Club. Sorry, I'm just a little bit tired right now. I've been writing about this book for months. And they would have, or they would have Maoist poets there, Marxist poets, quiz nights, concerts. It was a Marxist social club. And this was Kamala every Thursday night from the age of 4 or 5 years old. You know, most, as you know, John, most young Americans, if they're going to become communists, they'll do it in college. That's when they switch. She was communist from the cradle. She has never been anything but a communist. She was born a communist, a Maoist, specifically a Maoist communist.
Well, you see these videos with her and Howie Mandel, or who's that mayor, or that people say she slept with?
Willie Brown.
Willie Brown. Brown. Right, right. So you see these like paparazzi type tapes of those guys, and she seems like she's a pretty lady on their arm kind of thing. Like she doesn't have a political thought. She's just there to be escort them and make them look good on the red carpet and that kind of thing. And I think that's what most people think, is that she was this beautiful young lady who then had political aspirations, and she comes from this working class family. But of course, you're saying she was inculcated at a very young age into the Marxism.
Oh, absolutely.
Communism. So where did her political aspirations start? And why do we have this image of her with Howie Mandel and Willie Brown? Was that all part of
it? No, it was Mondale Williams, I think you're referring to.
Oh, is it? Well, I'm getting it. Was it Montel Williams?
Montel Williams.
Yeah. Did I say Howie? I'm sorry.
Yeah. She was briefly dating Montel Williams. But okay, the thing with everything she has done has been geared towards a political career, just like Barack Obama. She is the female Barack Obama. She was nurtured and set up for big things from a very, very early age. This is what the communist movement does. It picks young people of color and helps to educate them and provides jobs for them on the way through. Now, the thing that everybody misses with Willie Brown, that Willie Brown's a communist. You know, he's always been. He was elected to his first position in the California State Legislature by the W.E. Du Bois Club, which was the youth wing of the Communist Party USA. He worked with the Communist Party USA into the early 2000s. He was still sponsoring Communist Party events in San Francisco as late as 2002. This is 7 years after his affair with Kamala Harris. But he was also, interestingly, in the 60s, he was very active in Communist Party operations. They were campaigning against segregated housing in San Francisco, for instance. This was a common Communist Party activity around the country. And he was doing that with a young woman called Dianne Goldman, otherwise known as Dianne Feinstein. Dianne Feinstein becomes a senator from California. As the old Communist Party starts to fade in the early 2000s, well, he switches his allegiance more to the Chinese. So Willie Brown and Dianne Feinstein were China's best friends in the Bay Area. You know, Dianne Feinstein got China into the World Trade Organization. She used to stay with Hu Jintao, the mayor of Shanghai, who became the president of China, in his house in Shanghai, even though she served as chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Meanwhile, she has a Chinese spy on her staff for 20 years. And when that's exposed, Russell Lowe, that's exposed, she says, he was my driver. He was her office manager. He was getting Defense Department documents across his desk. And he was liaising regularly with the Chinese consul in San Francisco. This is the milieu that Kamala Harris comes from. This Chinese Maoist, this Maoist and Chinese consulate connected clique that basically runs San Francisco. This is where she comes from. Her whole life has been Maoist, involved with the Chinese Communist Party.
So she was with, Okay, so let me ask you this then, because this is the common Republican talking point that the Democrats hate to hear, and they always say it's a smear tactic, and but the Republicans will say she just slept her way to the top. That's what she did, and that's why we can't trust her, or one of the reasons.
Well, I think that's a cheap shot. You know, like she had an affair with Willie Brown. They say, well, he was a married man. Well, he'd been split from his wife for 9 years, his wife Blanche. He had an affair, but she is a climber. She does everything strategically, and I'm sure with help. You know, they say you need to go here. You need to connect up with Willie Brown. And he gave her a couple of jobs, you know, these sort of once a month meeting jobs where on some obscure board where you get $400,000 over 3 years for attending one meeting a month. So he helped her economically. He helped to introduce her to the circles she needed to know in San Francisco. But the key person that really helped Kamala Harris get where she is now is a man called Stephen Phillips, another Bay Area guy, a friend of Willie Brown's, by the way. And, you know, you take the questions where you want, but we have to include Steve Phillips in here at some point because he is the man that made her.
Well, let's do it now. Steve Phillips. Mm-hmm. So she has these political aspirations. Obviously, she doesn't go from a working class family, quote unquote, to being a DA and then where she is now. So how does this happen?
Well, this, go back a little, well, Willie Brown endorsed the young Steve Phillips for the San Francisco school board in the 90s. So Steve Phillips, Willie Brown, Kamala Harris were all quite tight in the early 90s. But this goes back. A lot of your viewers may have heard of or remember the Rainbow Coalition of the 1980s. It was Jesse Jackson, the great scamster, Reverend Jesse Jackson, who ran twice for president on the Democratic Party ticket. And in the second one, particularly in 1988, he got second in the Democratic primary. He got 7 million votes, which was regarded as pretty impressive because he was regarded as a total, you know, lunatic even then. But the Rainbow Coalition, see, this was the idea. He got this idea from the Black Panthers of Chicago. Rainbow Coalition means you get the progressive whites, progressive blacks, progressive browns, the Latinos, progressive Asians for the yellow stripe, gays for the lavender stripe, greens for the environmental stripe, reds for the Native American stripe, all the colors of the rainbow. You get the progressive whites and the progressive progressives of color together to form a majority. And that Rainbow Coalition was completely run by pro-Chinese communists from the Communist Workers' Party, League of Revolutionary Struggle, Line of March, Freedom Road Socialist Organization. It was a Maoist operation run by pro-Chinese communists. So Steve Phillips was part of this. He was a black law student at Stanford University. He was Jesse Jackson's West Coast organizer 2 election cycles in a row. He was very close to Jesse Jackson, involved with the League of Revolutionary Struggle. The Rainbow Coalition idea came from the League of Revolutionary Struggle and the Black Panthers. That's where it came from. And so Steve Phillips leaves Stanford, and like most of his comrades, he goes into the Democratic Party. He also marries one of the richest families in California, the Sandler family of San Francisco, the Golden West Savings and Loan Fortune, 5th largest SNL in the country. They sold it to Wachovia. There were so many subprime mortgages that it sent Wachovia broke. But they got a $2 billion profit from that, and they put that much of it, $1.3 billion of it, into the progressive movement. And Steve Phillips, who married their daughter, Susan Sandler, got to hand that money out. And he also joined the Democracy Alliance, helped to found it, which is a big network of left-wing billionaires, Tom Steyer, Norman Lear, George Soros, that you have to donate at least $200,000 a year just to belong to it. And so Steve Phillips provided the ideological direction to this group. He married the money with the Maoism, effectively. So Steve Phillips, in 2008, got $10 million together, and they did big voter registration drives in Black and Latino communities in 17 southern states. And that is what got Barack Obama ahead of Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary. Plus, Susan Sandler, his wife, was Barack Obama's first big donor. Barack Obama then went and ran twice on the Rainbow Coalition strategy. Progressive whites, progressive blacks, Latinos, get all the minorities together to form a majority. Because when Jesse Jackson ran, minorities were 19% of the population. By the time Obama ran, they were well over 30. And now they're pushing 40. So Steve Phillips is this mega rich, wealthy guy. He was also a very close friend of Maya Harris at Stanford University. She was a student radical with him. He was the one who got Tony West, her husband, the job under Eric Holder in the Justice Department, in Obama's Justice Department at number three. Steve Phillips has put millions of dollars into the progressive movement. He set up Center for American Progress. He set up ProPublica. I'm sure you've heard of them. He also had two people on his board that ran on the Rainbow Coalition strategy. He had Stacey Abrams from Georgia. He had Andrew Gillum from Florida. Both ran on the Rainbow Coalition strategy. Both of them. And Stacey Abrams still thinks she's governor of Georgia to this day. But it was Steve Phillips who got the money together to make Kamala Harris DA in San Francisco. It was Steve Phillips and Susan Sandler that funded Kamala Harris to become attorney general from California. It was Steve Phillips that got the money together to make her the U.S. Senate. And it was Steve Phillips who got her to run basically back to running for president and still is backing her. So at the same time, the Maoists and the Maoists who are still on the ground working with the Chinese consulate are running voter registration organizations in all the key swing states. So what Steve Phillips has done, he's married the big money of the Democracy Alliance, Soros and Steyer and all these guys with this grassroots pro-China Maoist network. That is what has made Kamala Harris. That's her support base. That's completely where she comes from.
Okay. I'm trying to think what direction to take this in. So we know that she's... Go ahead.
No, ask me about Virginia at some point because this illustrates the point. But you carry on with this question, please.
Well,
I think of these things as we go.
Yeah, Virginia. We could go to Virginia. I was thinking on a personal level, though. This is all really good information that needs to be out there. My question still is, though, Kamala herself, she obviously has policy ideas of her own, and she's not just the product, I would think, of all of these external influences. Maybe she is.
She's not dumb. You know, she's well above average intelligence, but she is not a great deep thinker. She's just a doctrinaire Marxist who is smart enough to hide it. But even that, you know, she talks about the joy in her campaign all the time. Well, that comes from Mao. Chairman Mao's works brought joy to the people. Her slogan, "We're not going back," comes from the Communist Party USA. Her other slogan, "When we fight, we win," that comes out of the Maoist movement. So she's dog whistling all the time to her base, just like Obama did with his, "In 5 days, we will fundamentally transform this nation." Well, we all think, oh, that's nice. But every Marxist understands what she means. And we shall be unburdened.
That comes
directly from Marx. We will not be unburdened by the history, the past history. We're going to create a new man. She's dog whistling all the time. But she is a manufactured candidate, and she will not be in charge of policy if she's president. This will be a continuation of Obama and Susan Rice and Valerie Jarrett and Xi Jinping, who I think are the real rulers of America right now.
I want to ask you about that in a moment. I know we have some other things, but if people have questions, I should probably say, look, put them into the comment section right now or during the course of the podcast. We're almost half an hour in, and I will ask Trevor. Here's one from Mary G. She says, I'm wondering what your guest thinks about the communist groups who are very vocal about hating Kamala. So I don't know about this. Are there groups that don't like her?
Well, I'll put it this way. This I'll explain it. Recently, Newsweek asked the Communist Party USA chairman, Joe Sims, if Kamala Harris was a communist. And of course, he says no. What would you expect he would say? It's like asking a mafia don, are you in the mafia? Oh, no, there's no such thing as the mafia. Look, there's two lefts in America, two broad communist factions in America. There's a faction around Liberation Road, the Maoist, Communist Party USA, which supports China, Committees of Correspondence for Democracy and Socialism, and Democratic Socialists of America. The first three of those groups are all pro-China, and they all support Kamala Harris, right? Then you have other groups, Workers' World Party, Socialist Alternative, who say, no, we don't. We think she's a corporate sellout. You know, they did the same under Obama. Obama's a complete communist. You'd have certain communist groups who would condemn him because it's a little bit like, you know, in Christianity, there's many denominations. Mm-hmm. And some denominations will condemn every other denomination, right? I'm not telling you anything new here, am I?
Right, right.
So this is some denominations of communism. Because she won't come out and declare herself as a communist, they will condemn her. But the real communists, Communist Party USA, Liberation, the powerful communists, they are backing her to the hilt with all of their organizations and calling her. They're saying to her, Angela Davis, just recently, the famous communist, just recently wrote, electing Kamala Harris will open up new spaces for struggle. You know, all these main communist organizations have endorsed her. But because there are these little communist sects out there who hate every other communist sect, because she's not part of their sect, they will condemn her. You've got to understand the communist movement isn't a bloc, just like Christianity isn't a bloc. There's hundreds of denominations. They're all united by basic beliefs. But they all have different ideas, and the same with the communist movement. And so you'll get certain communists absolutely criticizing Kamala Harris, but the real communists, the ones who are supported by China, they are in fully behind Kamala Harris, fully behind her.
Yeah, the dynamic you're describing exists in all human organizations or movements, I suppose, because
every movement, every religion, there's always factions. And every faction thinks they're the only right one.
Yeah, yeah. And there's purity spiral people on the right, too, who think that if you don't go out and say everything that would get you canceled, you're a sellout or something.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well,
look at Trump. There's a lot of Republicans who hate Trump.
Oh, yeah. I have a question.
A lot of Trump will love him, you know.
Drew Smith asks right now, could Trump be a plant? So I'll let you maybe take that rabbit trail right now, because I have listeners who won't vote for him because he's not pro-life enough.
I 100% get that. Look, this is what I say. Yeah, he could be. There has been Russian attempts to get inside Trump's circle, and he's got pro-Russian people around him now. But I don't think he is a plant. Because his whole life, his father was very conservative. He had people around him like Roy Cohen. He's very consistently taken a strong line against China and has been pretty tough against the bad guys when he's been in office. Yes, he could be a plant. Ronald Reagan could have been a plant. Who knows? You can never rule, you can never confirm a negative. Not that I'm saying I think Ronald Reagan was, but no, I don't think he's a plant, no. And I just want to address this with people saying you won't vote for Trump because he's not conservative enough. Or because he backtracked on abortion and he's been weak on marijuana. And I'm absolutely on board with all of that, you know. I fully understand that. But this is it. He is applying for a secular job. If my daughter was sick in hospital and there's only one doctor who could save her, I wouldn't impose a purity, a faith purity test on that doctor. If that doctor was a Hindu or an atheist or a Jew or a socialist or a Roman Catholic or a Mormon, I wouldn't care. I want my daughter fixed. And I think that is the correct approach. Now, I think the people who say this, and I'm not stupid. I'm hanging around with people all day who have a lot of issues with Trump, and I have some issues, believe me. But look, this is what will happen if Kamala is elected. People say we're not going to vote for Trump because we will come back with a real Christian candidate in 2028, and we'll be more pure, and we'll do this, and we'll do that. Do a little bit of math. There are 30 million illegal immigrants in this country right now, minimum. Minimum. Kamala Harris will give them all citizenship and voting rights, just like Hillary Clinton promised to do. That will give the Democrats more than 20 million new voters. Easily more than 20 million new voters. You, as most presidential elections are won or lost by less than 6 million votes, you tell me what that does to your chances in 2028. Then she will also flood the country with more of them, plus refugees from the Middle East, because she is a Black Lives Matter pro-Palestinian candidate, 100%. Plus she will pack the Supreme Court with at least 4 new left-wing justices, basically communists, so you can never defeat her in the Supreme Court again. Plus, she'll pass the Equality Act, which will put gay rights before Christian rights. So every Christian church in the country that will not do a gay marriage or accept gay pastors or accept gay youth pastors will get a $5 million lawsuit from the Department of Justice. Plus, she will go after the guns because she will already have the Supreme Court. Plus, she'll use the weapon organs of the state to go after her enemies, just like the Democrats did against Trump. But now it's going to be Christian nationalists. What is Christian nationalist? That's a patriotic Christian who believes in America and borders and God. That's a Christian nationalist. This is being set up. This is a communist revolution, people. We are one bad election away from having this country taken permanently from our grasp. How do you fight back when they have 20 or 30 million new voters overnight, plus they will draft many of them into the army, who will be then used to put down any little rebellions that might crop up. Plus, just think about the fact that we're $34 trillion in debt. Now, President Trump, if he's in power, he will open up the energy sector, he will lower taxes and get the private economy booming again. And then he would negotiate with our creditors. Kamala Harris will tax unrealized capital gains, meaning if you buy a house for $300,000, she's going to give you $25,000 to buy a house, right? Oh, that's nice. Okay. but you buy a house for, say, $300,000, right? But in 5 years' time, it's worth $450,000. Every year, you're going to be taxed for that $150,000 profit, even though it's not realized. You're going to have to find that money every year because that's a profit. Every year you make a profit on your house, you'll be taxed for that. What do you think that's going to do to the middle class? What do you think that's going to do? You know, look, people need to understand. And look, if you don't believe me, read my book and then get back to me. People need to understand this is a Marxist revolution. She is just as bad as Hugo Chavez or Fidel Castro. And Tim Walz is just the same. And as I write in my other books, House Un-American Security Risk Senators, we got approximately 40 Marxist senators serving right now. Ossoff, Warnock in Georgia, Patty Murray in, in Washington State, Chris Murphy in Connecticut, all these people. Plus, we got about 100 Marxist Congress members. Plus, almost all of Biden's current cabinet members, from Julie Sue, Labor, Miguel Cardona, Education, Deb Haaland, and Interior, are all Marxists. All of them. You know, we're in a revolution. They need one more election, legalize 30 million illegals, impose capital gains taxes, shut down the energy industry, and you tell me how you're going to organize opposition to that in 2028.
Is she worse than Biden as far as, because Biden's already pushing all these things.
Yeah.
But is she going to accelerate them? I've wondered at times, I guess, if Biden is just an opportunist who isn't really much of an ideologue, but just kind of, he's going to go with whatever. But
yeah. Well, Biden was put in power by pro-Soviet operatives. But Biden was very much in bed with the Soviet Union when he was a senator, very deeply in bed. But because he was in Delaware, which was then a Republican state, he played the moderate game in domestically. And this is what a lot of these people do. Tim Walz, right, yeah, was in a very conservative district of southern Minnesota where they all go pheasant hunting every week during the season, where they're all conservatives. And he was pro-gun, pro-gun, pro-gun. Soon as he became the governor, anti-gun, anti-gun, total, no more moderation. Joe Biden was never a moderate, but he is an opportunist. Joe Biden was working in the interests of Moscow since the early 70s, Iran since the late 70s, and China since at least 2001. But he is still not the ideologue that Kamala Harris is. Kamala Harris, if she's given the opportunity, will finish the job that Barack Obama started because she believes in it. She absolutely believes in it.
I was trying to remember the name of she was, a senator from New York years ago. Blonde hair.
Kirsten Gillibrand.
Yeah, that was it. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know why I couldn't remember her name, but it was a little before, I guess, when I was that interested in politics. I was always kind of interested, but I couldn't vote when she ascended. But she was also, I remember, big gun rights, you know.
Because she was in upstate New York.
She was upstate New York.
In an upstate, exactly. And this, I was actually going to bring her up next because this is a perfect example. She was regarded as a moderate Democrat when she held a seat in upstate New York where people go hunting, where it was a fairly evenly split district. But as soon as she became senator from New York, anti-gun, liberal, total socialist, absolutely. See, this is the thing. This people need to understand. Look, Kamala Harris has got a more left-wing voting record than Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, okay? But this is what you really need to understand. Don't look at what they say. Don't even look at how they vote. Look at the district they represent and the people they have around them. Because like Joe Biden was in Delaware. He was the first Democrat to win statewide in Delaware ever. So is he going to come out all crazy liberal in a state like that and expect to get reelected? You know, so that is why you've got people like Tim Walz who have a moderate record, even a moderate voting record, and a conservative record on some issues. But as soon as they get statewide power, that's when the true agenda comes
out. They're nuts. I mean, Tim Walz is...
He's a lunatic.
He's way out there.
He's a hardcore communist. But, Kamala Harris is the Black Lives Matter candidate. If you think Joe Biden was a radical... If you think Barack Obama was a bit radical, you ain't seen nothing yet because she's going to go for broke. And the big ace in the hole is all of those illegal immigrants. That's what will protect her from any backlash. You know?
Yeah. There's so many things to talk about. And we're 42 minutes in. Let's just keep going if that's okay.
I'm fine. I'm good.
I do want to ask you about Virginia because you footnoted that. So why don't we Why don't we go there, and then we'll come back to maybe talking about the election and how things are going to go in November. But what did you want to say about Virginia specifically?
Well, I just want to give an example because you lived there, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, Virginia used to be a really, really red southern state, right?
Yep.
It was rock solid, red, you know, part of the old Confederacy. It was never going to change. In 2007, the Liberation Road Communist Group, the pro-Chinese Maoists who gave us Black Lives Matter, who started Black Lives Matter, they set up a voter registration group in Northern Virginia called New Virginia Majority. They wore orange T-shirts, like Acorn. Many of them were ex-Acorn people. And they went out, and in about 3 years, they signed up 300,000 minority voters in Northern Virginia for the Democratic Party. They helped Obama win Virginia in 2008. They take credit for it, and rightly so. Then they worked with Terry McAuliffe, the governor of Virginia, to personally sign pardons for 200,000 Virginia felons so they could vote too. And they went out and aggressively signed up tens of thousands of those people. So that 500,000 voting base is what they used to flip Virginia from red to blue. Now, the reason they were so efficient and so successful is they were using GIS computerized maps. They had every single precinct in Virginia mapped out. They could tell you the income levels, the ethnicities, which neighborhoods were mainly Iranian, which neighborhoods were Filipino, whatever. So they could send the right volunteers into the right neighborhoods to maximize the get out the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those maps were made and still are being made on contract by a Liberation Road communist called Steve McClure, who works out of the geography department of Wuhan University, China.
Oh, great.
So this network is the reason North Carolina has a Democrat governor. It is the reason that Georgia has two Marxist senators, Ossoff and Warnock. It is the reason why Arizona has two Democrat senators. They are using the Rainbow Coalition strategy through the southern states. This is a new Democratic mantra. And it's Steve Phillips lays this out in his book, Brown is the New White, New York Times bestseller, lays this all out. You know, Democrats, forget about the middle. Don't worry about chasing these middle voters anymore. Go into the South, run progressive candidates of color, and mobilize the Black and Latino and college kid base in the South. Run the Rainbow Coalition strategy all through the southern states. And they know they only have to flip North Carolina permanently blue, bring Georgia into the blue camp and Arizona, and get one or two more southern states, then the Republicans can never elect another president. This is the strategy.
Yeah.
This is Andrew Gillum. This is Stacey Abrams.
This is also part of the strategy to take evangelical Christians and introduce progressive ID talking points so that they aren't a solid Republican block anymore.
Absolutely. This is all about, and this is why the Southern Baptists have been so infiltrated, because the South is the bedrock of conservative Christianity and the Republican Party, but it also has big Black and Latino minorities. So if you can shift that white conservative base a little bit to the left, you reach a tipping point where those southern states can be conquered. And Georgia is right on that tipping point. North Carolina is not far off it. You know, Virginia's already gone over the tipping point. Arizona is right on the tipping point. But Tennessee isn't that far away. Texas is not that far away either. And if it wasn't for Ron DeSantis, Florida would have already been there. So this is the strategy. This is a Chinese. These groups are all connected to the Chinese consulate in San Francisco. They all work with a group called the Seed the Vote, which was started by the Chinese Progressive Association in San Francisco, which is the propaganda arm of the Chinese consulate in San Francisco. They also started up a group called Asians for Black Lives, which basically ran Black Lives Matter for the Chinese consulate. So We have got Chinese-influenced voter registration organizations in every key swing state working the Black and Latino communities. If anybody's seen Catherine Engelbrecht's movie 2000 Mules, she talked about how nonprofits were using Black Lives Matter activists to stuff ballots in key swing states. Okay. Well, I found those same organizations by following the, she did it through cell phone data. I did it through following the networks out of the Chinese consulate. Same groups. In Arizona, they had Lucha, which knocked on, which made 1.8 million phone calls in 2020 and knocked on 800,000 doors. In Pennsylvania, they had Pennsylvania Stands Up. In Wisconsin, they had Black Leaders Organizing Communities, BLOC. In Georgia, they had the New Georgia Project, Stacey Abrams Group. In Michigan, they had Detroit Action. All of the key states had major Chinese-backed voter registration organizations on the ground in the big cities working the Black and Latino and inner-city communities to swing those states to Biden-Harris. This is very methodical. But you think if you were China and you wanted to bring America down, which you know damn well know they do, would you want to risk a multi-billion dollar trade war or a multi-trillion dollar shooting war before you are ready? Or would you rather spend a few billion dollars buying American politicians and using the communist networks you already have on the ground to influence key elections? What would you do?
Yeah,
you know, a lot less cost. The far less cost, far less risk. I've got Alex Tom of the Chinese Progressive Association on tape saying, our job is to protect China by bringing down President Trump. This is what they say. This is what, so anybody who thinks I'm going to sit this election out, just understand you're handing the country to China by doing so. And I understand your moral qualms, but we are supposed to restrain evil, are we not? And the way to restrain evil in our time right now is to make sure the Democrats do not get permanent power in this country. And how do you do that, pray tell, without voting for President Trump in this election?
We have some comments. I thought this was interesting. By the way, 80% of these illegal immigrants have been sent to areas that didn't vote for Biden. This is quite intentional. I noticed when I've been traveling, I'm sure you travel, I go to heartland areas, Boise, Idaho, the middle of nowhere in Wisconsin, and they complain about the influx of illegal migrants to these areas. Traffic, housing projects going up that contractors have to take it, the contract, or else they're going to be outbid. And they have money seemingly out of nowhere. They have thousands of dollars to live on every month. And these are areas that, you know, Boise, Idaho, why in the world? It's a deep red state.
Why does somebody from Gabon end up in Boise, Idaho? Because it's that, look, if you don't believe anything I've said, just do a little bit of math. Why would a government open its borders to over 10 million illegals and actually fly in people? They send planes to overseas destinations to fly in people if there wasn't a political purpose behind it.
Yeah.
Why would they do that? Because there's a big electoral risk in this.
Brianna Hill says, I live in a red part of a blue state and we had an influx of immigrants. In fact, there is an apartment complex listed online as no longer operating that is housing a mass amount right now. The corner around the corner from me.
Yeah. So, why would they send them to Los Angeles and Portland when they already have those places? Send them to Boise, send them to Kansas City, send them to Iowa, they look at all the districts that could be flipped with a few thousand votes, and that's where they're sending these people.
If Trump gets in, I haven't heard him articulate a plan past we're going to have mass deportations, but
sure.
I would think with all this election interference, and you've so clearly laid this out from foreign governments, nonetheless, and the Democrats, of course, accusing him of this are telling on themselves, I think. This is what they've been doing.
Yeah.
He needs to do something about it. Like there has to be a massive crackdown on this if the country is going to continue or else it's a failed state at that point.
I write in my book, I talk about a group called a coalition of these groups. Their goal is to mobilize 40 million new voters for the Democratic Party. It's mind-boggling. They say there's 100 million Americans who don't vote. We need to get 40% of those to the polls for the Democrats. This is industrial-scale stuff. So what has to happen? This is why I've written a book, so people understand the depth of this movement. So people around Trump can read this and understand what they're dealing with, because he superficially understands. And, you know, he's going to purge a lot of people from the civil service, and I think a lot of good things will happen. But you're right. There has to be. Look, I believe the president has to set up a new intelligence agency, not drawn from CIA or FBI or anything like this, but a super vetted new intelligence agency, people from special forces and police departments, super patriots whose job it is to root out foreign influence in America. That's what they got to do. And they also got to go and do RICO lawsuits in the federal RICO lawsuits in the big inner city voter fraud operations, because you cannot clean up Los Angeles from California. You can't clean up Chicago from Illinois. That's got to be federal. And you got to go in there, catch low-level people, and get them to flip on those above them, offer them amnesty. But this new this is what I would do if I were Trump. I would set up a new intelligence agency, then I'd declare an amnesty. Not on illegals. You got 3 months. Every foreign operative, every traitor, everybody who's taken foreign money or is working for a foreign entity or globalist institution, you've got 3 months to either leave the country permanently, never come back, or 3 months to register with a new intelligence agency and spill your guts. Tell us every single thing you know, who you paid off, who paid you off, what the operations are. And if you are truthful and honest, you'll get amnesty from prosecution. You can live your life. Your punishment is between you and God. You can make your peace with the American people. You can apologize for your crimes, but you will live out your life. If you don't come forward in 3 months, we'll have so much evidence that we can put you in the slammer for 40 years. Mm. I think you would have to probably jail about 50 vote fraudsters in America and a couple of hundred traitors to shut down the whole problem. Because you imagine 3 months, you know, every foreign network, Iranian, Chinese, North Korean, Cuban, whatever, every, say, dirty Iranian businessman bribing a senator, he wouldn't know if the senator was wearing a wire and had taken a deal. And the senator wouldn't know if the Iranian businessman had taken the deal and was wearing a wire. Their whole networks would melt down. Their trust would be destroyed. This is how you take down organized crime. You get low-level informants. You offer them amnesty if they will rat out their bosses. This is how they took down Murder, Inc. in the 1930s with Thomas Dewey. This is how they went after the Gambinos, etc. You get the low-level guys. You give them a job out in Boise, Idaho, if they will testify, you know? And this is how you got to – this is how we got to clean out the massive foreign infiltration of this country that is electoral. It is our business community. It's the academic community. It's Hollywood. It's definitely Wall Street. A lot of people get into treason, and not inadvertently, but they are weak, and they get in a business deal they shouldn't have got in. They cut a few corners here. They get compromised. They're found in bed with somebody they shouldn't have been in bed with, and they get inveigled into these networks, and there's no way out because they'll go to jail, so they just keep on going. Well, give them a way out. Give them the way to make their peace with God and the American people. Live out your life. Be a good person. No, but those who are just will not quit, they deserve to go to jail for a very long time. And I think if that happened, people would finally understand how deep the treason is, how deep the penetration is, and they would support the security measures going forward to make sure this doesn't happen again. Like, do you know, you don't have to have any background check to serve on the House Intelligence Committee or the House Homeland Security Committee or the House Armed Services Committee. None. You have to get a background check to be to serve in the intelligence community, but not on the committee. You know, Benny Thompson, the head of the Homeland Security Committee, who did the January the 6th operation, the biggest threat to American democracy since the Civil War. He used to support the Republic of New Africa. That was a Black Panther communist group that wanted to split five southern states away from America to set up a Black Republic in the South. He worked with the Communist Party USA, Communist Workers Party, and Democratic Socialists of America, and he went to Cuba in 2000, had a meeting with Fidel Castro, and arranged for scholarships for 140 young American communist radicals to do seven-year medical scholarships in Cuba, and now they're all over the country stirring up revolution. That's Benny Thompson, the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee.
Great.
I write about him in my book, House Un-Americans. You know, you can see some of my books over the back there. Security risk, senators, House Un-Americans.
Yeah, someone commented that they couldn't take me seriously because I don't have a library background. So you have quite a few books back there.
Yeah, well, yeah, I've never read them. Well, I have. But I think, John, what I want to say to people is I fully understand reservations about voting for someone like Trump who, you know, has a bit of a mixed background, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, King David wasn't an angel, was he? You know?
Yeah, yeah. I think of Trump in the, yeah, I mean, people say Samson sometimes, which I think is probably a closer approximation. But
yeah,
this is, I mean, with the problems you're describing, here's the thing. Like, I'm from California originally. That's where my parents were born and raised. Well, my mom was born in Ohio, but she was raised in California. So they both of them grew up there, right? And it was a paradise. And so I still have this memory. Even in the 90s, it wasn't too bad, but it, you know, the cancer had already metastasized at that point. And now I don't even want to go back there sometimes. It's just, it's disgusting. I mean, not in the outlying areas, but in the outlying areas, it's expensive. It's just not, it'll never be the California that they grew up in or the one that I remember from when I was young. Yeah. And that's all of America now, in my mind. Like, that's what we're talking about. All of America is just going to be California. The Republicans have no chance.
Yeah.
It's communist at that point.
Why California flipped is because in 1996, the communists got behind, they got rid of B1 Bob Dornan. He was Santa Ana area, a very hardcore Christian conservative, and put in, Loretta Sanchez. That was the communists did that. And they were using illegal immigrants to do it. That's how they did it. And they ran the Rainbow Coalition strategy in California by bringing millions of illegals across the border and signing up illegals to vote. That's how they flipped California. So this is an example. This is a deliberate program. You look at what's happened to Pennsylvania now, Philadelphia. You know, you look what's happened to Detroit. That started in the 60s when they had the communist-inspired Detroit riots. Then they elected the communist mayor, Coleman Young, who just drove business out of the city and collapsed the tax base. Goal is a communist America, because every communist and globalist around the world understands that the only impediment to their goals is a free, constitutional, Christian America. That's the only thing stopping it right now. And so what I believe is this, you know, President Trump is not a perfect man, but he has deep courage. And he has a proven record of getting things right economically and standing up to America's enemies on board. The next president is going to be facing off against Putin, Rocket Boy, Xi Jinping, and the mullahs, and the Mexican problems. Do you think they're going to respect Kamala Harris for one second? Do you think they're going to be scared of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz? We had 4 years of relative peace under Trump because he's so darn unpredictable that he terrified America's enemies. And they knew he would strike back if they provoked us. We've had 4 years of Biden, and how's the world gone in that time?
Yeah.
If Kamala Harris is in, the US dollar will be sunk. We'll have interest rates at 25% in this country. There'll be unrealized capital gains taxes. The flood across the border will increase, and the citizens will be legalized. They'll be drafted into the army. Christianity will be persecuted, and conservatives and patriots will be chased down, hunted down like the January the 6th people are now. If anybody thinks I'm exaggerating, please, you know, let me know. But so if a Christian says to me, I understand the consequences that America will be destroyed if Kamala Harris is elected, but my conscience does not allow me to vote for Donald Trump, and I'm going to stick by my conscience, even if that means possibly the destruction of America, I would respect that point of view. At least it's morally consistent. But for somebody to say, well, I heard somebody say the other day, well, these Christians are going to vote for Trump because they're worried about the gas prices might get a little bit higher. No, they're worried about the destruction of their country and their children's futures.
Yeah.
To me, it is a moral duty to stand against evil. You know, you look at Nazi Germany. When Hitler ran, there was no good opposition to him. You know, there was no great Christian candidate standing against Hitler. The Christians could have stopped Hitler if they'd voted for the lesser parties. And Hitler only won with 33% of the vote. But the Christians didn't unite. They didn't stop Hitler. And then they didn't stand against Hitler when he did get elected. You know, they became good Nazi Christians. They put swastikas in their churches. And that led to a disaster that killed tens of millions of people. And who had to sort it out? It was American and Canadian Christian boys who picked up guns and put on uniforms and charged into Nazi machine guns on the beaches of Normandy. You know, we are in a similar situation today. We can stand together and stop the destruction of our country and give this country a chance to recover, or we can stand on our false moral purity and say, we are above this fray. We will not vote for this individual because our conscience cannot be violated. We will let our children die. We will let our country be destroyed. We will let Christianity be persecuted in this land when it could have been stopped, but our consciences will be pure. Well, yeah, I wonder how that'll go on Judgment Day.
Yeah, I think... what you're getting at, I've had to think about this quite a bit. Actually, you know...
And everybody should think about this.
A friend of mine, Ben Crenshaw, did a great article at American Reformer on this topic, and he talks about conscience and how this is... Well, I don't want to get into the whole thing because we're over an hour, but this is a bit deceptive to, boil this all down to a conscience thing. This is a political vote. This is... You are... having an opportunity to impact the direction that your country is going to go in.
Yes.
In the real world and in the real tangible lives of your children, and not just your children, but my children. And so when someone says, and I have friends who they say, this is my conscience, I'm not going to do it. And some of the, these aren't my friends, but I have seen people almost gleeful that God's going to judge America, which you're insane, man. Like my kids are going to suffer for your decision here too. So I'm developing a lot less patience for it. 2016, I had a little more, maybe because of my own naivety, but I thought, okay, I can see the whole, we're going to come back in 4 years with a better candidate. Let's purify the party. That's not an option. That doesn't exist. We don't have a country. You're talking about 40 million illegal aliens, there's no way to come back. And I saw what happened to California. So, I am getting to the point where I'm kind of like, you know, spare me the conscience talk. I understand. I get it. I've been really tolerant of those things because I've been there in 2016. I was kind of there. But I'm to the point now where I'm like, I'm looking at my daughter. I think maybe being a father is something to do with this too.
And
I'm just like
100%.
I'm just like, you know what? Your purity of your conscience on this. I understand that's, you think that you're doing the right thing, but, this is not the same kind of decision as, it was four or 8 years ago. It's not the kind of decision it is when you're trying to put a pastor into your church.
Yeah.
This is a decision for whether or not we suicide ourselves as a country. And to abstain from voting or to vote for a third party to me, is not a political decision. You don't call it a political decision. It's you're sitting out the election. And when you sit out the election, you're not engaged in the moral battle that actually exists, in my opinion.
Yeah. Look,
you stirred up something in me, but.
Well, look, I think that's 100%. Look, if your little, your little child was drowning in a river and you couldn't jump in, you had a broken leg, couldn't jump in, and a big hulking biker walks down the road and he's smoking dope and he's covered in tattoos and he's got a lengthy prison record, would you beg that man to jump in and save your daughter?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. You would. Because that would be the moral thing to do. We're choosing a secular position here. And it is Christians' fault that there isn't a great Christian candidate. If Christians had been voting 50% for the last 10 years, a quarter of Christians vote in this country. So you wonder why there is no great Christian candidate. So the whole country has to suffer now because you weren't active in promoting your values for long enough and deep enough.
Yeah.
This is the thing. This is a secular position. And, I think it's a no-brainer. You always vote. This isn't voting for the lesser two evils. You're voting against pure evil here for someone who's going to do a lot of good for the country, maybe some bad things, maybe some mediocre things, but you're voting for someone who's going to at least help your children's future as opposed to someone who's going to destroy it. I don't think there's any moral, I have no moral qualms about advocating people voting for Trump. And I've been one of his biggest critics in the past, believe me.
Same.
Well,
I would say if someone's listening and they say, that's my conscience and I can't do it, please keep it to yourself. Don't go out there and advocate. Everyone else needs to,
But at least understand what the consequences
yes.
are. If you understand the consequences and you still do it, I respect you. But make that decision when you don't understand the consequences. That's a false decision.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of naivety. There's a lot of people without political positions living in red areas who think that they can weather the next 4 years. And the judgment, it's the catastrophe that is coming. I just don't know if people have thought through, and once they experience it and get a taste for it, I think they'll feel different. But then
it's too late, isn't it? Then it's too late to turn it back. It's discernment. You've got to be discerning.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to identify evil. You're not supposed to be naive and Pollyanna-ish. You're supposed to be discerning. You're supposed to understand evil. You're supposed to stand up to evil and be able to identify evil.
Yeah.
If your friend in the military cannot identify the fact that his potential commander-in-chief is consumed by evil, that's really on him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think of what, Reagan, I think, famously said, freedom's one generation away from extinction. But I think of Roger Scruton and what he said about how good things take a long time to develop and they can be destroyed very quickly. And that's what we're living through. Mm. It took generations to get to where we are with the blessings we enjoy in the United States. And it only takes a few bad leaders to bring it all down with some very bad decisions. And so the question is, do we want to honor our fathers as the Fifth Commandment says and continue the America as much as we can where we live that we enjoyed, or are we just going to wash it away? I have one question.
Honor your fathers.
Honor your fathers.
We're free because your fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers fought battles to make us free. A great sacrifice. And your grandmothers and great-grandmothers worked 14-hour days in factories and hospitals and farms and kept the kids going to school and stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning writing letters to their boyfriends and husbands and brothers overseas. Is it not our moral obligation to preserve that which they gave us? Is that not honoring your father?
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, I have one final question. I a lot of people are lighting it up with questions, but we're an hour and 11 minutes. So I just want to ask you this, though, for my own curiosity, because you've done so much research on communism. And we've been talking, I guess we haven't talked as much about Kamala Harris as I thought we would, but we've given her, you've talked about her communist background and the connections that she has there. And how the communists, these foreign countries are infiltrating our elections and other things. My question is this. someone made a comment to me the other day, and I thought this is really shrewd. They said, you know, a lot of the more right wing Christian nationalists, like people who actually claim the term, right? Someone who actually is advocating for some kind of Christian nationalism, Christian nationalists, or, you know, other right wing, dissident right wing kind of groups that are, let's just say, if they were going to give their name and you knew where their address was, they'd be fired from their job. So they operate in this manner online where they have to have pseudonyms, and you don't know who these people are. It's avatars a lot of the time. And there's groups, places like Twitter or Gab, where you have a lot of people like this. And he said to me, you know, if I were trying to infiltrate a group, that would be the easiest group to infiltrate, because all I would have to do, I wouldn't even need to provide my name, nothing about me, not anything to vet. All I'd have to do is go out there and post a bunch of offensive, you know, offensive to the left, or just offensive stuff that you could even post, you know, very racially insensitive stuff, whatever. Absolutely. But you end up building some credibility that you're willing to take risks, except you're not really taking a huge risk if it's not your name, right?
Yeah.
There's hardly any risk if it's untraceable. And you could infiltrate these groups. You could get into private chat groups. You could end up in chat groups with very influential people. I'll just full disclosure. I mean, I've been members in the past of chat groups that have everyone from, you know, people that I'm not even exactly sure what their background is, to more influential people, but they're all kind of connected online, share each other's articles and these kinds of things. And when this person said that, it's not like I hadn't thought about this before, but it really bothered me in ways it hadn't, because I thought, you know, that's so true. And I hear constantly, I just talked to a young gentleman in the military at a prestigious academy the other day, and he said, they're teaching us in the military that it's the Christian nationalists that are the big threat. They're the terrorists. They're the ones we should focus on. If the government's pouring all these resources, and this is my question, do you have evidence at all that they are infiltrating right-wing groups, trying to goad them into taking positions that would be bad for them, or just to associate with things that will hurt the movement, that kind of thing?
Oh, look, you saw the case with Gretchen Whitmer, you know, that so-called plot to kidnap Whitmer. You know, that was FBI agents organized that. They got into a group, got some naive people to go along with it. This is a very common technique, you know, to plant agent provocateurs into groups to egg on extremism, or get people to say racist statements or things that can be used to discredit them, or even blackmail them in the future. Look, if you're in a group and you see people calling for violence or, you know, racial statements, that get out of it, because you know that your every keystroke you're doing is being recorded for potential future use against you. If Kamala Harris gets in, you will see a crackdown on Christian nationalism. You will see that. You will see people round up. They've already put the leader of the Oath Keepers in jail for a long period of time. You know, the Proud Boys is a precursor of what is to come. You know, Proud Boys is reasonably extreme, but they were doing nothing that deserved major jail sentences. But see, now Catholics who observe the, you know, really strictly observant Catholics are a threat now. So you're absolutely, this is coming. The Christian nationalism is going to be heavily persecuted if Kamala Harris gets in. And that means any Christian who believes in the inerrancy of the Bible, or who believes in things like the Constitution, or radical concepts like a border, or wants to homeschool their kids, all of those things, or stands or doesn't want to accept the homosexual agenda, these people will be the main threat. So you'd be very careful about who you associate with in these groups. I would only associate in groups where I know who the people are.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I am in that thinking at this point. I'm just wondering if any of the left-wing publications, since you read all the Marxist communist publications, if they talk about infiltrating these groups subversively at all.
Well, I wouldn't say it openly, but I know they do. I've known that for even back in my New Zealand days, but they do that. But this is now what the FBI is teaching. This is what There's been papers written by Homeland Security about this. In the old days, they used to focus on communists and Islamic radicals. They don't even talk about them anymore. You know, this... See, what we're experiencing is a revolution like Czechoslovakia in 1948. You know, most of Eastern Europe was conquered by the Red Army, but and communism was imposed from above. Czechoslovakia wasn't. It stayed democratic and, you know, and having a parliamentary democracy until 1948. But they had an election in 1946. The communists won two cabinet positions, and they got security and they got police. And they used those to shut down their enemies, go after their enemies, blackmail their enemies. And by 1948, they had a communist government. That is the model. The Czechoslovakia in 1948 is the model for America. Get control of the security services, FBI, Justice Department, CIA, etc., and turn them from attacking our enemies to attacking this internal threat, which is Christian nationalism. That's where we're heading. If this election goes the wrong way.
Yeah. Ordinary, decent Americans that have probably been here for generations.
Who served in the military, who go to church, who are involved in their schools and their communities, but they believe in the Constitution. They believe in God. They believe in borders. They believe in the difference between right and wrong. They do not want their kids subjected to a homosexual agenda or transgenderism, whatever. They are the new threat. And I think everybody watching this podcast will acknowledge the truth of that.
Yeah.
And you will see what happens if Kamala Harris gets in. You see what happens to the Christian nationalist narrative.
Oh, I have no doubt. Yeah. I appreciate you taking that question, because I've been thinking about that off and on. And I've seen among a lot of pseudonymous accounts and stuff, but people with really no political influence at all. But people who want to almost sometimes even make it a purity test that you need to say radical things. And if you don't, you know, we're going to say you're a fake, or, you know, there's a purity spiral element to this. And it's just an odd for any group wanting to gain power like the Marxists do. They're very smart about it. It seems like they go in subversively. They take advantage of obviously the liberals who welcome them in. And then once they're in there, they start shutting the doors behind them and only letting their people in.
Yeah, but, well, we saw that in Enemies Within Church. You know,
that's
how
right.
How do you take over a Bible college? You get two or three people in influential positions, then you never hire any more conservatives.
They only hire your friends. They die out. They retire. And that's what's happened all over the place. So. Thanks for that. People want to get the book, they can go to trevorlowden.com. You can get it now, or at least pre-order it, get a signed copy there. That's what I'd recommend. That's the way to support Trevor. I'm sure you get more than Jeff Bezos does.
I do. And it's very welcome, but I like signing books for people too. It'll be on Amazon, but that's just a few days away when I don't even know exactly the day that will be, but it's coming soon.
Yeah, the book is Stealth, Kamala Harris's Communist Roots. And where are you going to be next, Trevor, if people want to see you on the road?
Well, I'm going to be this week. I'm going to be in Southern California. Got two meetings there. Two meetings in Southern California. I've got a tour of Colorado in early October. That will be well advertised. I'm going to be up in Pennsylvania twice through October. I haven't been putting my dates on my website because I'm starting to get Antifa types trying to get venues shut down. You know, that's a bit of a problem. They'll phone up hotels and say, we're going to protest if you let this man speak here, you know. So, but I may just start doing that this month because it's such an important time. But I'm going to be California, Kansas City,
You're all over the place.
I just wake up in the morning and I have to look at the phone by the bed to see what city I'm in half the time.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you doing that. And it's a lot. It's grueling, but the word needs to get out there. So so thank you. And I just recommend people go to the website, get the book, and whenever Trevor puts the schedule there, go see him on the road and give him some encouragement. So God bless, Trevor. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Always a pleasure, John. And so glad things are going well for you. And congratulations to you and the family. And thanks so much to all the listeners, yep. all the viewers.
God bless.
God bless. Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.